Welcome to Life Lab with David Ponder and Zach Schaefer. We are the podcast of experience experiments.
We give you those experiments via change challenges at the end of each episode.
We created this podcast because we wanted to talk about important topics that can help us all live meaningful lives.
You might agree with what we have to say, or you might disagree. But the point there is that you get something new to think about.
There's no edits and no gimmicks. Our entire point is to help you take action and live a better life.
You only get one life to live, so you may as well make the most of it.
Hello, Zach Schaefer here.
And David Ponder.
And today we are going to talk about controversy.
Controversy.
And there's none of that ever in the United States.
Yeah, there's always that. But there's always that everywhere. There's controversy at your dinner table.
Yeah, micro and macro.
So we always start off one of these with the definition, and I think this is a good time to do it. This one says that controversy is a state of prolonged public dispute or debate, usually concerning a matter of conflicting opinion or point of view. The word was coined from Latin controversia as a composite of controversus, turned in an opposite direction, from contra, against, to turn against. So basically, it's when everyone disagrees.
It's disagreement. Yeah. That's controversy means disagreement. Yeah.
It's like a heavy way of saying that
it's a more
people disagree.
More formalized way of talking about disagreement.
Right. There is a disagreement. There is a controversy.
Yeah.
I think it's like maybe there's like a time frame analysis put in there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you disagree for like a few minutes. After that, it becomes the controversy.
Oh, yeah. No, interesting, because the prolonged part. That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was your biggest thought when you were – because Dave actually – he didn't have a lot to say about this one organically, so he wanted some time to do some notes. So when you going through your notes, what's your biggest thought that struck you there? Like, huh, okay, I want to make sure I talk about this.
That it comes down to decision science, which is related to work that I do. And we've talked about decision science before. So, and that there are all these other things that come into play. But ultimately, you know, which side of the fence you're on. Oh, the other thing that struck me, the one thing that struck me the most, I'll say this. So decision science is important because ultimately for a controversy to be settled, how does a controversy get settled? Well, in a democracy, right? Generally, there will be votes or representatives or something where they'll decide, we're going to go this way, right? So what's the problem with a controversy? The problem with a controversy is that you have to get stuff done. And topics where no decision can be made and agreed upon by all parties involved become paralyzing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we've put in mechanisms to try to figure out a way to move forward despite the ongoing controversy. So to get to the root of this, we have mechanisms like court. So federal courts are meant to settle controversies. As a matter of fact, the U.S. Constitution has a clause in it that talks about what judicial power shall extend to. And it literally says, judicial power shall extend to controversies in which the United States shall be a party. And it restricts federal courts from ruling in situations where there is no such controversy. So, like, advisory opinions. We think you should do this. Nope. U.S. federal courts are restricted from doing that by the Constitution. Or from hearing cases that don't have enough controversy arisen, right? Or that are moot, meaning that the controversy has already been resolved. So we've put in these mechanisms like, you know, court to continue to decide how do we move forward. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, you're never going to get consensus. Consensus, I think, is the ideal. Would you say consensus is the opposite of controversy?
It depends on how it's arrived at. Some people arrive at consensus through coercion. Or consensus by apathy. I give up. Okay, I agree with you now. All right? So if it's empowered consensus, sure, that's great. But that you typically don't see people in court, Dave, being like, the side that's losing being like, okay, yep, this is a great verdict, judge. Thanks, if they're on the other side of the fence.
No, that's a very good point.
Yeah.
Well, so maybe what you're saying is we never arrive to true consensus.
Well, not in court. I mean, the consensus is, yeah, it's clear on the verdict after it goes through all of the different appeals and appellate courts. But once there's eventually a finalized verdict on the controversy, then it's over. Like, you can't keep moving forward with it.
I think I understand what you're saying. This happens in, like we said, it happens at the dinner table. This happens at work. This happens at school.
But you talked about it at a very big level. You said that was your biggest thought today, was you went right to decision science and the federal law and the U.S. Constitution.
I didn't want to tie it back to the federal thing. But what I did want to tie it back to is we as a community, civilization, we have to decide how to move forward together because we are social animals when we are in disagreement. That's like the most important thing that came to me out of this.
Yeah, that's good. I like that.
Like, it's practical, right? Otherwise, you got some people who, like, they want to make their life about fighting for controversy, for the need to be right, for justice, for truth, whatever, right? And for me, I would agree with that, but there's something called Benford's Law, which is that astrophysicist Gregory Benford said this in 1980, and he basically said passion is inversely proportional to the amount of real information available. So wherever there's enough information available that everyone agrees upon, quote-unquote factual information, the lower the propensity for controversy. So where do you see controversy? You see controversy arising in areas where there is disputable information, and people are disputing it. Now, we can continue talking about the internet age and the fact that stuff that's pretty well, you know, irrefutable is still getting disputed.
Well, yeah, I was like, this is a guy that studies natural sciences with clear laws.
Right.
So, of course, it's easy for Benford to say that.
Well, no, and he's just saying, like, it trends to, like, he doesn't say you can't have controversy. He just says wherever there are areas where there's not a ton of information, it's ripe for controversy.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes more sense saying it that way.
And so, I agree with that. So what I would say is we've got plenty of areas where there's not a ton of information and we have to figure out how to work together and get along.
Hmm.
Yeah. That's my biggest takeaway.
Wow. Nice. Yeah. I like it. It's very moralistic.
I don't know.
Mine is very different.
Okay. What's yours?
Controversy is the greatest tool of control that people in power have. It's all about the framing of the narrative. What we even talk about as a controversy is given to us on a platter through the media. The things that we even begin to discuss and have disagreement over at a larger level, a societal level, as you talk about, have been strategically framed, labeled. Talk about decision science. The people that are putting these master narratives out there, boy, there's science going into that about how, are you for or against this? Are you for or against that? Everything is either or. Everything's a dichotomy. Everything's winner or loser. You're on our side or you're on the other. Why? Because that sells. Controversy creates confusion. Controversy can be used as smoke and mirrors to get people looking over here while the real actions are occurring over here. Let me give this is my personal thought on this, and I think here's a wonderful example of this. When Trump was running in the primary, so before he was elected, he was making some statements, and this is still very ongoing, this topic about immigration. He referred to immigrants trying to get into the U.S. from Mexico. He said they're all just rapists and murderers and drug dealers. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
He made that blanket statement. The same day he made that tweet, he sent it out, I saw a separate article that didn't get any kind of major press. The Trump Organization in Mexico had filed for like 32 different federal registrations for different things that they were trying to get registered and trademarked down in Mexico while he's running for the president. So what is the create a controversy, get everybody talking, look at this tweet, it's crazy, and then do all of this stuff that could be considered illegal by many people because he's running for president. So to me, it's just controversy. It ties to who we are as humans. We can't advance without disagreement. We just won't. But in a larger sense in this sphere, Dave talked about the legal arena. So that's one sphere. There's very clear rules to the game. That's the other thing. People with power get to not only define what normal people talk about as a controversy, but also how they talk about it as a controversy. They've defined, they've built the monopoly board, they've built the monopoly pieces, and they just want us to pick them up and kind of move them around. That's how I view it.
Well, I agree with everything that you said, and I would say that yours and mine are definitely not polar opposites. They work together. And so when I say I agree with everything you said, it's kind of crazy because what you're saying is not only did they define the game, which they did, but they are also defining how we're playing the game, where we're playing the game.
All the rules.
What the
rules
game
of engagement of controversy.
Yeah, well, I mean, they create the rules of engagement and they create what the game is and say, this is who's going to play and this is why. The reasons for playing, which is insane, but it's true. So the game can be the things that I talked about, right? Like court is used to settle controversies.
Well, think about politics.
The media and popular opinion are used to settle controversies because generally policy gets made by elected officials, right? And you were talking about rules.
I disagree there. Policies made public by elected officials, but it's typically written by armies of corporate lawyers working on behalf of the elected officials who write it and then hand it to them and say, here's the law we
want.
But
officially, if you look at the history, there's a vote. And, you know, of the 435
That's the pretty narrative that makes me feel good.
So that's what I'm saying. So the way the system looks, right, is you got representatives and they cast their vote on your behalf and voila, all of a sudden you got a tax.
Yeah, that's funny. That's funny. That's right? That's a pretty narrative that I can read my daughter to bed at night.
So, but what I'm saying is those are the laws of the game that we're talking about. What they're voting on, what we're saying is not only did that get decided a while ago, and if that were enacted appropriately, it would be pretty fair. I'm not saying it's perfect, but it would be pretty fair. But they get to decide what's even voted on in the first place is what you're saying. And the things that we should be talking about
floor, right? But let's go to a totally different one. Controversy. It's a pill, guy, that's being shoved down our throat. Look at any TV show, any TV show, a stupid show about house updates. Everything has to turn into a controversy now. They build controversy, disagreement, conflict in to this show. Oh, the goddamn contractor didn't show up, and you see the homeowner like stomping. It's so ridiculous, and everyone's just like, oh, this is good. Oh, yeah, whoa. And it's just trying to create this story and this narrative that's false. It doesn't exist. Just show me a before picture and an after picture. Done. Show over. Next thing. But we don't want that because we've now been trained like rats in a maze. Well, where's the disagreement? Where's the transformation? Where's the change?
You're hitting on something. I'll disagree. You're hitting on something that I think is core to our evolution, our tendencies, and that is storytelling.
Well, yeah, we're called homo narrans.
Yeah. And so what's a key element of any story?
Right.
Ever hear a good story with no conflict, no controversy?
And they're trying to do that, but to me, I just view what's going on in the media as a symptom of a more important, I don't want to say plan, but as a more important indicator of what's going on at a more federal level, at a larger level.
I'll agree with that. I'll agree with that. I wouldn't use the word federal. I would use...
Yeah, federal wasn't the right term.
I would use the word macro.
Macroeconomic, yeah, macro level.
Yeah, and I would say it's driven by economics more than anything.
Oh, yeah.
Economics and
power. Yeah, greed, power.
And I think power...
Loss aversion.
Yeah. Economics and power are intertwined.
Labeling is maybe the most important tactic within controversy. You need to get the labels set. You need to create how people talk about it, the specific words. And that's why I think politics, who are some of the most important people to politicians? The strategists behind the scenes that write all the shit that they then talk about.
Right, right.
I mean,
the American Freedom Act.
Or just whatever.
Like,
yeah,
what
it's
the
just
hell is the
the
American
people that
Freedom
create the labels and words that we all then, when we're at, I'm at dinner club tonight. So somebody's going to bring something up and say, hey, do you see this? Like they'll have read a headline. Hey, what do you think about this? And what I think about it is what whoever has written it wants. They want me to use the labels that have been predefined in order to talk about it to say, I'm either this or I'm that.
Yes.
And I just think it's a funny, funny little game. And again, I'm a weirdo. I see it differently. But I understand the power of language. As soon as you get the, you're either for abortion or against it.
Yeah.
You're either this way on death penalty
climate
or that
change.
Way. It's,
yeah.
But
yeah.
even that, the phrase climate change was a strategic climate move change. To get that label accepted. Rather than global warming.
And they change them. Yeah, they mm-hmm. change them over time because oh, this isn't working out for us.
Right. Strategists are in the game of controversy. They are controversy creators at the political level. Right. I mean, and so I respect it, but I don't like it. Like, it's amazing. Like, they work. If you want to see how controversy works, go watch the movie V for Vendetta. And pay attention to the little PR guy that spins everything up in order for the authoritarian regime. He's a master controversy creator, that character in that movie. And that explains what I'm talking about.
And I think it works like that in times 100 more. It's 100 times more complicated.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, that is very easy to follow. Right. I think the way that it works in the real world, it ends up going that way. But there's so many hands in the pot,
right?
And it's so complex. The
and
way
reaction,
that it gets that way.
Action, reaction, and
so
you can't predict
groups.
It all.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons why. Okay, so we're getting a little right. These are things that you typically hear old conspiracy theorist guys talk about, and we're getting a little bit down that road. But what I'll always do to bring it back is this: is I'll bring up my belief that when you talk about controversy and the ability for power and economics to have its impact on anyone on controversy, I typically tend to lean toward the fact that you don't have a centralized power group running and making the decisions behind the scenes. In my belief, I believe you have multiple power groups
right.
that all have their own interest doing a tug of war. But it always ends up going in the same direction. They all have shared interests. So those shared interests get locked in. And then everything as a whole starts to move in that direction. And then what the particulars are, they argue and fight about those things between themselves. But I love what you're saying. It's like the number one thing you got to do is use these strategies, right? So first of all, we have to create a controversy. That gets people... You could even create a controversy that's on a completely different subject just to get people distracted.
Right.
Or you could create a controversy around this.
Like a red herring.
Yes, like a red herring. Or you could create a controversy that you want folks to argue with on themselves about to stir up passion in mm-hmm. an area where – and then throw in
– like Trump's currently doing with the send her back stuff.
Yes, exactly.
And playing on the immigration, knowing that his people will love that. And again, I haven't dug into this issue. I just know it's something going on. It's brilliantly political. It's a smart strategy that he's doing. He's whipping up that passion. And now, do I agree with it personally? No, of course not. But the game that they're in, they know what they're doing. There's four people, send her back. He's labeling this whole progressive caucus as if they're all this way. There's four out of like 89 people. That are this way, and now he's got everybody stirred up. Like, it's really brilliant political strategy, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I only say that because you're saying you can create a red herring or you can do it within the area you want to whip up passion. That was just an example of what you were saying.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. So anyway, I don't know where I was going with that.
Sorry, I got you off your track. My bad.
It's okay.
I mean, another thing I wanted to talk about with controversy is at a smaller level. You know, I'm a mediator, so I have a mediation background. So, again, that's another very structured game to play. Like, here are the rules. If we're not going to play them this way, it's over. My only goal is to help you two agree to things, for you two to find some consensus and agreement and move forward. I got no dogs in this fight. Like, no offense, I go on and have a great day. You guys go on. What's tomorrow look like if you can't resolve this kind of thing? So again, the legal system has its rules for controversy and resolution. Mediation does. The media is interesting. Yeah, any newscast, any sports show, there has to now be two sides. There's got to be two sides. We're always arguing. Everything's just shoved down our throats all the time, and we don't accept it. Oh, yeah. Oh, I love Steve. Do you like Stephen A? Like, they just set it up. They tee it up for you to only have one opinion or the other. And it's just so funny to me, and people don't even see this.
I want to gravitate back to what you were talking about as far as what the things that are discussed, and even more importantly, the things that aren't discussed on the national narrative. Because, and I, the only reason I want to go back to that is because when I look at Benford's Law of Controversy, and I look at the quote there, which is that passion is inversely proportional to the amount of real information available. The first word there is passion. And then I wanted to ask, this is something I wanted to talk about. People have a need to be right.
Yeah.
There's an emotional gratification that comes about.
Yeah, there's a lot of psychology there.
From being on the quote-unquote winning team, the winning side, being the right one.
Yeah, pride. A lot of pride tied in there.
And I think that that emotion is can be easily construed against us to do basically to purport exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, of course. That's politics. It's a, let's whip people up into an emotional very few people vote on logic. People vote based on their beliefs, which typically come from their emotions. And now they won't ever say that. They'll point, well, no, this one policy, this is why I'm doing it. Bullshit, man. Like, it's just, it is. It's, we tie it, the most, if anything to me proves that humans are emotion first, logic second, it's our entire political system and how it works. We do everything based on emotion there. It's a great tool.
And I would say the news is a, would you say it's a tool of that? I mean, it's just an extension of it.
Yeah, I mean, in theory, so with the Benford quote, passion, read it one more time.
Passion is inversely proportional to the amount of real information available.
So my issue with his quote is the phrase real information available.
Yeah. Well, there, here we go. Controversy. What's real information?
Right. Yeah. Where's the source? Where's it coming from? Is it credible? Right. Are they competent? Do they have character? What's their agenda? Where's the money coming from? Again, he's an astrophysicist, so he's studying immutable nature and laws. It makes sense. You take that statement and put it in a social realm, it is not so clear cut.
Well, and that's where controversy can arise, right? I think he's basically being like, look, you drop a hammer, it falls at this rate per speed, you know, per second. That's it. You measure it, whatever. And he goes on to say, like, if you that controversy, because of that law, controversy tends to be restricted to things that cannot be experimentally
proven. Until it's not. So in science, even, it operates on what's called normal science until there's a paradigm shift where something changes and everyone hates it and there's major controversy among the scientists who are most objective people on planet Earth, very analytical, show me the numbers, facts, figures, data, logic. But then once that community is like, oh, nope, yep, this is the new way to do it, then everything's different.
That's
moving
true.
Forward.
And I love those paradigm shifts. Those blow your mind. But those are typically a yes and, where something that was proven to be true before and experimentally proven still is true, but also there's this new thing they learned about why it's true and whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Typically. I mean, I can, you know, there's, yeah, but there's other ones that are no, but like the Earth being the center of the universe, you know, there's some pretty big ones have occurred over time.
Right. Or no, this is wrong, but because the new experiments prove it, but here's why we thought it. They still know what the progression of decision was based on experiments.
So what is your response at a micro level when somebody brings up a controversial topic to you and clearly is wanting you to take a side? And obviously, you might know what their side is, or you can predict what their side is. How do you respond? In a social setting, not a work setting.
Internally, I get all worked up. But ever since I've been doing the whole trying to listen thing, I've become way more self-aware. And I've become very restrained in the things I say and the way that I say them.
Yeah, I would actually agree that I agree with your assessment of your self-assessment. You definitely pull back because you used to have a strong opinions without caring what other people think. And never phrased meanly, but just like, here's how it is. This is it. I'd always just be like, oh, Dave's so certain. He read it in an article. But you don't do that anymore.
Well, and it's helped me become self-aware of two things. Number one, that I'm trying to persuade, and why am I trying to persuade? That's number one. And number two, am I so sure? As I've gotten older, I've become more agnostic about just about everything.
There it is. That's my response. So tonight at my dinner club, when people bring up whatever topic, you know, I've got my head pretty focused right at this point. My line of sight on the things that I'm having to do. My phrase is, I don't know. I don't know much about it. I need to dig into that. It's just not interesting to me. And that's on a lot of things. And maybe they should be, but they're just not. Abortion, capital punishment, this immigration stuff, just all kinds of stuff going on. I don't know. I'm not digging in. I'm not buying into that narrative. Sorry, I don't have time for it right now. And maybe that's wrong. There's plenty of other things just more important in my life right now, and I'm okay with that. But then the other thing is I'm able to read, or I'll just ask, yeah, why are you asking? My opinion, like, is that, have you formed yours yet? Do you want me to agree with you, or you just want to know what I think? Because those are two very different ones. I don't care to persuade you on a topic I don't know much about, because that's stupid.
Yeah, I agree. You know, one of the things that's tough for me is that I don't even know where my personal biases are coming from, right? I don't know if it's a recency bias that just, you know, it's been hot lately.
Right. I'm repeating a headline.
So, yes, like global warming for sure, because I've been sweating for the past however many days, and I'm pretty sure it wasn't like this when I was little. You know what I mean? Or is it because of, you know, like any number of things? Is it because of my background, my history, my personal experiences, my whatever? What biases am I bringing to this conversation, you know? So typically, if I do respond to those people who are like, well, I want to know what you think, I'd be like, well, here's what I want to think.
Ooh, I like that phrase. That's good.
You know, and then I might even qualify it and say, now, if I were trying to really examine why I want to think that, I would have to do some introspection and research. To be honest with you, I would. Why is it that I tend to believe those things? I don't, you know, sometimes I know. So, and sometimes I'll say, maybe it's because of X, maybe it's because of Y. And I'll give personal experiences or things that I've accepted that I'm building upon. But anyway.
Here's something that I've realized in the last decade. Debate. So debate is a formal mechanism to discuss typically a controversial idea where there's at least two sides. But debate, as we hear it in a public forum, has anyone in any public debate about something where there's an audience, whether it's in the room or through a television or the internet, has anyone in the debate ever just gone, you know what, I agree, and got up and moved to the other side? Ever? Has that ever occurred in a public debate that you've seen? No. Why? Because of the format. It's not about truly trying to persuade others. It's about trying to prove your position. It's win-loss. That's the foreground. The win-loss. So for me, where does actual real debate occur, where people are exchanging ideas, where actual persuasion can occur and some transformation? It is at the dinner tables and in the informal exchanges with friends. And it's not going to follow his formal logic, and there's going to be passion and emotion involved. But then people leave and can unwind and be like, well, man, that was an interesting idea there, and perhaps change their mind. To me, that's more important format than the official staged one on a show going on. That's just about that's more, to me, entertainment.
I'll agree with you 100%. And where I end up going at those dinner table conversations and everything more recently when I'm agnostic is, instead of fighting for one side or the other, I'll oftentimes listen to the other person tell me their rock solid case of why they're right, and I'll just say, I'm not so sure that the assumptions that you base that on are, quote unquote, what does he say, real information.
I just like to be contrarian.
I'm devil's advocate.
I love it.
I used to love that.
It's fun, but I, you know, do it playfully with both sides. And
well, so I didn't used to love that. I used to like digging in my heels into the side that I thought was true and just out arguing the other person.
Yeah, you just wanted to argue. You were in argument for the sport. Yeah. Like, you should have probably gone in, or another thing you could have done very successfully was being some kind of IT attorney.
Mm-hmm. I thought about that lots of times. Yep. Yeah, I do enjoy arguing. And
yes,
it's not that
do.
I still don't enjoy arguing. Oh, I do. I've just become wise to the fact that a lot of times I would
what it does argue to the other party.
Yeah, it doesn't help, you know what I mean? Like if I'm doing it one-on-one, it's absolutely useless. If I'm doing it in front of other people, it puts on a good show for the other people, but definitely doesn't convince, you know.
Yeah, no, just so. Very rarely is somebody like, you got me, yep, I'm on your team now.
Right.
Hey, it just doesn't happen that much.
Right.
Right. What else on controversy? I mean, we had talked about narrative. Yeah, controversy, conflict, disagreement. It's the vital element in a story.
I would say two things. Like so controversies are fun. In my opinion, they're fun to discuss. They are dinner table fodder. Were there no controversy, we would just be talking about things that we all know.
It gives us something to do.
Right?
It gives us something to do.
Well, and it stirs up those emotions. And so when I say I'm agnostic now, I'm also an optimist. I am a crazy optimist. And I tend to get in these conversations with what, like I said, what I want to believe is this. And that's really true because, like, I have this picture of the future. So because of that, when I get into controversial topics, if I sit at a dinner table and somebody talks about some headline that was in a newspaper, I generally have nothing to say and no interest talking about it, generally. Now, that's not always true. It could be in the field of technology, some new thing that's coming out that was just in the newspaper, or I don't know. Attacking somebody who is a technologist that I want to defend because, and I know that there are, you know, or I believe that there are inaccuracies to that, and I'll bring those things up. But typically I like to talk about the big things that would be life-changing if they were ever settled, because it's exciting, the prospect that one day they will be settled and it will change our lives. I think about the things that have changed our lives, and I'm not so sure so many people take the time to be retrospective and go, oh my God, yeah, that completely changed our lives.
Well, of course not, because we have so many micro controversies going on all over that need to consume our brain bandwidth.
And it's those things that I would rather discuss. I would be like, you know what? I don't know what the right answer is for this political thing. I don't know which side I should be on when it comes to this controversial topic that's been controversial for the last 50, 100 years. I don't know. You know what I mean? And I'm just not interested digging in and fighting about those things. I would much rather talk about some things that are like big picture life-changing things. Like, okay, let's talk about some I think that we share, which would be like the dollar, right? So our president tweeted out, I hate Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. They'll never amount to anything. It's the U.S. dollar because, you know, Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies are based on nothing, and the dollar will always be strong. And it's like, oh my God, like there's this thing screaming inside the people who know to go to respond and say, well, the dollar's based on nothing too. The dollar's literally based on nothing, you know, and you can print as many of them as you want, blah, blah, blah. So those are the types of things that I'm like, oh, I like talking about that, because if that were ever to change, that the dollar were the world reserve currency, everyone's lives would be different. It would immediately impact everyone's lives, and everyone's lives would be different. How? I don't know, but it'd be cool to see how it played out. Maybe the power structures that be that are dependent on that being the currency would have some shock that they would have to adjust to.
Hey, maybe the meek would inherit the earth.
No, I'm not that optimistic. I'm not that optimistic, but I think it'd be fun to see these things change.
I agree.
Here's one that we watched happen real time that I just loved watching it play out. In the end, they ended up winning still, which is a bummer. But watching them be uncomfortable and try and figure it out and technology just eroding what they had was amazing. And I'm talking about Napster. Whenever the music streaming came out, right? So I remember being like, oh my gosh, there's like these super fast internet is about to come out. And I remember talking to people about it. Think about the things you could send across the internet. Right now, we've got these crappy MIDI music files that go ding, ding, ding. It kind of sounds like the thing. But you could actually encode real songs and send them to each other and just copy them. And it was like blowing my mind. I want to talk to people about it. Be like, do you realize what this is going to do? You know, and then we get to SLU and we just start downloading. Like we would hit somebody's computer that had 3,000 songs.
On the intranet, you could basically nab everyone's songs on the St. Louis University intranet. So anyone in any dorm with their computer hooked up to it, you could just get all their stuff really fast.
And people now take this stuff for granted. Oh, well, of course you can. You can just stream music. Why would you even do that? $10 a month. Not back then. You had to pay $15 for a CD that had 10 songs on it if you were lucky, one of which you wanted. You know what I mean?
You didn't even know what the other 14 were.
It was the old. I mean, the music industry had the ultimate scam going. It's like you want
a
one
strong
song,
monopoly.
Yeah, they had a monopoly,
but
they
it
had
wasn't
the distribution.
Even, it wasn't some crazy conspiracy. They didn't even know there was other options out there too.
I know, but what I'm saying is, like, when I get to a table, I would like to talk about something that I think is going to change our something, some aspect of our life. And it's just amazing watching people fight against it or
what do people do when a controversy comes up and they disagree with it? What are common reactions that people will do?
Well, I like to watch physical reactions. One is like scooting back in their chair.
Right. So a lot of fidgeting, uncomfortability, lack of eye contact. What else do they do, though?
Raise their voice.
Yeah, they get angry. They express the emotions and they'll typically attack the person that's talking about it. Yeah. So instantly go to an ad hominem attack is what that's called. The credibility and character of the person talking about it. So as soon as I start seeing those nonverbals and hearing the tone and anger and emotional expression change, and then they attack somebody, I'm like, oh, they're done.
Yeah. They go to ad hominem attacks. They do all kinds of false argumentations things, right? Like they'll take things ad absurdum.
Mm-hmm.
What? If marijuana is legal, what's next?
Yeah.
We're just going to be shooting up heroin in
right.
churches? Like, like, okay. It's funny because that is all driven by that passion word that is from Benford's Law of Controversy. It stirs up passion, becomes good, you know, table time fodder, whatever, and then people fight over it. What I take away from most of the exchanges that I have in those is, I guess I've kind of changed the way that I have fun to more harmless topics where I can kind of dream big and not offend, I guess, instead of just digging in on something that no one's ever going to agree on.
Yeah. You valued the competitive aspect of the argumentation process and overlooked how it was affecting the social relationship. And that's what changed as you're trying to become a better listener. You paid more attention to the person and the environment rather than just the structure of the discussion.
And I'll kind of draw my discussion on this topic to a point. And that is that I tend to see what I talked about in the beginning. When you're like, what's the most important thing for you on this? Ultimately, we have to move forward together. Our family, our friends, our coworkers, you know, at the lowest level. And if you want to talk about enacting change at the big level, you always start at the little level, right? And I, when it comes to making decisions, love to have consensus with the people that I am working through things with. Now, how you get consensus is through discussion. It's through pointing out controversy. And you'll never get everyone to end up disagreeing on the particulars. But if you can get people in a group to agree upon the way to move forward and deal with the situation, then you've won. I feel like it's so funny. Now that you have the internet and you have all more information, you have old things that were settled. You've got these groups of people who are so passionate that passion word comes up. For some reason, it strikes a chord in them so much that they want to bring up old things that have been settled for years, tens of years, hundreds of years.
Flat earthers.
I was going to say, because they're the perfect example. Like, they literally want to.
But to me, it's
convince people the earth is flat.
To me, it's more important. What it ties to is a kind of a philosophical principle. People believe their beliefs. People believe their beliefs, and they're willing to die for them and be ridiculed. And so that's why whenever you used to be arguing with people and it was over like a belief, like, good luck, you know? But if that was fun for you in sport, then, yeah, great. You're getting ego satisfaction.
It was.
But if you're really thinking, I'm going to change someone's belief system, okay, good luck.
Yeah, so oftentimes now...
And when I say you, I just mean humans.
Well, and oftentimes now, and I think we were having a conversation this morning, and I said this to you. Somebody's feeling really passionately about something. Rather than argue with them, I'll say, well, okay, well, what are you going to do about it?
Mm-hmm.
Because ultimately, That's what we're talking about. Any controversy that's worth discussing is one that's worth acting on.
Everything's action oriented, or if it's important to you.
Yeah.
And if it's not, then you're a hypocrite.
Yeah. When I talk about those future ones where it's like fun to just do some like imagining, right? There's no action that I need to take there. It's just me hoping that the future turns out cool and trying to tie in some maybe things that will happen and discuss.
Here's a problem, though. This is a whole separate episode. Well, this could be a controversy in itself. What is considered action today? Is me following a group on Facebook action? Is me liking a thread or a comment on Facebook action? Is me donating $5 to a cause and being like, I'm in the movement, I donated $5 action? And to me, that is the weakest shit and weakest forms of action anyone could have. Well, and we have trained ourselves to believe, hey, I made a comment on Facebook, I'm helping move things forward. And I think that is such a bad narrative for people to believe.
Well, I had an idea, you know, going back to my argumentative self. Like, if I'm ever in a really passionate conversation about someone and they're like, we have to do this, we have to get it done. And I go, okay, well, you know, what are you going to do about it? And they go, well, I've already taken action. I just donated $5 to the mm-hmm. Facebook group on it. Mm-hmm. I'll go, okay, so you care $5 on a Facebook group worth. Okay.
Good. Yeah.
That speaks everything.
That's inspirational.
Yeah.
I don't have much more to say on this topic outside of change challenges. I mean, clearly if you do, let's keep talking, but I'm tapped out of controversy.
Yeah. I think I'm through it.
I've got one. Think about what gets your blood boiling. What controversies get your blood boiling, and then just think about why. And then think about when that topic, so what gets your blood boiling, step one. Step two, the hard question, why? Step three, when it's brought up, how do you respond? And not how do you think you respond or how you would like to respond. How do you actually respond when it's brought up? What are your nonverbals like? What is your tone? What words are you using to discuss it with people? Are you actually listening to their points? My guess is probably not. So blood boiling, why? How are you responding in that conversation? Just reflection. You don't even need to write it down.
I like that. I'll say this. I'll say disarm your controversies. So everyone has internal controversies where the things that make them feel passionate, right? And they would be willing to engage. And I would say, do what Zach just said. Write down the list of things that stir that passion in you. And then write down the gap between what you know, what the quote unquote factual knowledge is now and what it would be if no one could argue it. And then admit to yourself that that gap is real and you don't really know. Does that make sense?
Repeat it. I was jotting down a note so I can put it in our change challenge notes.
Write down the gap between the knowledge that we have now and what it would take for an experiment to prove to everyone without a doubt
the future
state. That it is true. Yes. And then admit to yourself that that gap exists, and so you can't fully know.
I like that. Last one, simple. Pay attention to controversial topics in the media, in large media, and just pay attention to how they want you to talk about it. What labels are they? What rules are they using? What labels? What language? How do they want you to bring it up at the dinner table? What's the either or here? And think about it like a game. They're giving you terms, and they might not even know they're doing that, but they are. How do they want you to talk about these things? And again, just smile at it because it's a game going on, and it is about defining these topics of disagreement to move the needle in one direction or the other.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Cool.
Okay.
Well, anything else?
I don't think so. The only thing is I want to close out what I was talking about with my change challenge because I didn't get to close it.
Sure.
When you paint the gap between the knowledge that we know now about your subject and what experiment there would be that would prove it to everyone on the planet where no one could argue about it, the controversy would be over. Allow that gap to imagine it as like something that is soothing that burning passion in you. Like it's putting out that fire. It's you admitting that you don't have justification to feel so passionately about it until we have that all of that knowledge, and then just try your best to swing yourself back into a position of neutrality, because it's just a better place to live and think from without bias and emotion driving your action. So anyway, yeah.
Well, there's a lot of controversy in the last thing you said, because I disagree with pretty much most of it. So, but that can be left for another time.
All right. I love it.
Cool. Well, take us out, Dave.
So controversy happens in your life on a daily basis. It's whenever you have conversations with somebody and you don't agree. We've given you some change challenges to try to address controversy in the macro and in the micro. And we've even successfully ended the episode with controversy, which, how could you do it any better?
Perfect.
So, like we always say, experiment with life.
Experiment.